Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show, 312-981-7200. If you want your voice to be heard, that's through text or by phone. It's up to you. Hi, Wendy.
We got a whole lot of Lightfoot.
We have a whole lot of Lightfoot. Steve and I were chatting a little before the show, and first of all, congratulations to her, to our new mayor, Lori Lightfoot. Would you agree this is kind of an unlikely story? This is what they call a Cinderella story.
I don't know if she even saw it coming.
No.
It's pretty incredible, and I'm pretty proud.
A generation ago, if you were looking at possible contenders to be the mayor of a city like Chicago, you would say, oh, okay, here's this person, here's this person. Here's a person who happens to be black. Here's a person who happens to be a woman. Here's a person who happens to be openly gay. You think they could be the mayor? And the answer would be a very resounding no, and yet happened last night without a problem.
Breaking through the ceiling.
Finally.
Breaking the ceiling or breaking through it?
I think through it would be the way to go.
You don't want to break the ceiling because it would fall on you.
Yeah, you have shards of glass all over you.
So then when it falls, it's falling on someone else. I mean, I've been doing this long enough to remember when there was a Polish seat, there was a black seat, there was
Italian
a white
seat,
you know, and city government and Cook County government, where those things were slotted out. And here we are.
So what changed, Steve? Did we all just figure out that that wasn't the right way to do it?
No.
We didn't figure that out?
I think the Democratic machine lost some of its clout. I think we started identifying some of the ethnicities lost some of their clout as well.
Yeah.
So we just started identifying ourselves in different ways.
I wish we could put all that aside and just vote for the best candidate. You know what I mean?
I think that still happens. I think people look at the
no
candidates.
No one voted last night. The turnout was
really
terrible.
Now,
did you
very
vote,
low.
Wendy?
Yes, for my local elections. Yes, I did.
I voted on that issue with Mary Vandeveld's pool. Boy, I had to wait in line for that.
Oh, we got to find out what. I don't know if they have the results yet.
They're going to fill
that.
The cement pond.
For people who don't know what we're talking about, as we were doing our election coverage yesterday, it came up that the biggest issue where Mary lives is the big pool issue. Can we have one pool or two pools? Crazy times
that
we live in.
That
what
is,
crazy times.
Boy, that just sounds like...
But I do think people kind of want to vote for the person they perceive to be the best. I hope they separate nationality and color and sexual orientation. And I heard people last night saying, why is it important that... And the headlines you'll see say, first openly gay mayor of Chicago and stuff like that. Why is that important? It's important because there's still kids that are disenfranchised who think that if they're gay, that maybe their life isn't going to turn out quite the way they want it to. And this is just a step in the right direction saying, oh, yes, it can. Look.
What I think is interesting, and first of all, bad news for the Villa Park pool.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Villa Park voters not backing plan to save Lufkin Pool.
Oh,
it's a one pool town, Wendy. There's nothing we can do.
No. But they'll have extra. They'll have a chlorine sale because they bought the season ahead. But
there's the good news in that.
Right.
Thank you.
What strikes me is that gay is like number three on her list of groups, if you will. I mean, it's not even a big deal that she happens to be gay. Right.
But we're talking
about the fact that it's the first African-American woman elected.
Right.
Oh, and she's gay.
Right. But it still is in the headline of a lot of stories. If you look at the national stories about her, that's mentioned in the headline. But look at this guy, Pete Buttigieg.
Oh, yeah.
Who is also openly gay. And for some reason, like, that used to be such a deterrent for people. It would be a secret. Like, if a president,
right.
a guy was running for president and he or she was gay, their campaign manager would go, do not let this get out. We'll be ruined. But thankfully, not anymore.
And think about it. Gay is totally accepted by young people today, more so than the old crotchety people.
Yes.
I'm sorry, that's a fact.
No, that's, yeah.
So,
good.
And also something that surprised me is we talked to Paul Lisnick yesterday, and many people were saying that low voter turnout would probably translate to a Preckwinkle win. No way, Jose.
Yeah, I guess in a low turnout, it just depends on who those people are who do turn out.
Well, who has more enthusiasm behind them.
Exactly.
She certainly had more enthusiasm, but you would have thought, you know, Preckwinkle, don't forget, and this goes to slotting candidates, she's the chairwoman of the Cook County Democratic Party.
Right.
And she got 25% of the vote.
Right. Right. And she was the front runner through most of the campaign, Steve. Am I wrong? Wasn't Toni Preckwinkle the front runner? Or if not in
the number one
spot, she was in the number two or three spot.
Yeah.
But always head and shoulders above the rest. So I'm trying to figure out where, and I'm sure she is too.
Oh yeah,
where did things go so horribly wrong? When you're leading the division by 20 games with 21 to go, what happened?
People want to change. People want to. I mean, that's a lot of the reason Donald Trump got elected.
I think that's a big part of it. And
yeah.
You look at some of these candidates who are winning in the aldermanic races without much experience. People want new voices coming in, or they want
exactly.
the old voices out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, congratulations to Lori Lightfoot.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm proud. I'm happy for her. Now she just better do a good job. That's
or
all
else.
I'm saying.
Or and else who, they'll close her other pool.
And again,
like they did by Mary Vanderbilt's house.
And again, who
Very
wants
depressed.
This job? I mean, really, this is, you know, listening to her talk, it's like, you know, we've got a lot to do here in Chicago. God, who wants to do that?
Right.
It's so much.
Yeah, but can't you say that about almost any public office? We've asked people who are running for things, why are you running for this? You know, and the obvious answer is always, well, because I like where I am and I want to make things better, and that should be the reason you're running for office. So good for everybody
good for
who's
her.
Doing it. Yeah, we're very proud. In a little while, we'll talk to Coleman Vandermeer Bailow. Coleman has been a guest with us in the past. He's the guy who became famous when Lori Lightfoot won the first mayoral election, where they narrowed it down to just the two candidates. He was the guy on television who was dancing and dancing
behind
and dancing.
Eric Rung,
behind
who
Eric.
Was doing a live report.
And Eric is here right now, so we could do a reunion.
Yes,
yeah.
We have to reunite them.
Eric, you're talking to the dancer.
But we had him on just because through Bill's genius, he's like, let's get the dancing guy on. Let's just find out what his deal is.
I thought he was amazing. You know, in
he's a good dancer.
What time is he on?
In just a little bit, at
10:35.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had him on, and if you remember, he was unemployed at the moment, so we put some information out there in case somebody wanted to contact him. He was volunteering for Lori Lightfoot,
right.
But now he has been hired. Very soon thereafter, he was hired by Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah.
And he is now the outreach coordinator, and congratulations, and I wish he could come in and dance.
Right. And the way things work here in Chicago, if Lori Lightfoot cannot finish her term as mayor, he becomes the mayor. It's the craziest rule.
Does he know that?
I don't know if he does.
We'll tell
I don't
him.
Know. All right, we'll take a break, and then we've got to check in with Mary and find out what happened with this this pool initiative.
Yeah, that's a sad,
crazy
sad
story.
Thing.
I wanted to talk to Mary about what's going on with the pool in her hometown, but I don't think she's around. Mary, you're not there, are you?
No, she's actually just getting her flippers and her bathing cap.
Oh, she's going to go swimming, Steve?
She's going to use the community shower we have here since the pool's been closed.
Has anyone that you know used that?
Todd.
People use it all the time.
The shower, the WGN shower?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've not used it.
I don't know about any girls. I want to find out if any
No
women.
Girls will.
No. I'm not going in there.
I'm sorry. Come on.
Do they clean it?
Yeah, they have to clean it.
Yeah, I know of girls who use it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, name names.
Oh.
I also won't name names, but I've been here twice on a weekend, and Dave Schwann just walks around in a towel.
Right.
He's very comfortable.
And you ask him where the shower is, he doesn't know.
He has no idea. What's wrong with him?
He's got those little flippers on.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, and a duck. He's got a little, like, an inflatable duck. It's the weirdest thing.
I don't want to think about a coworker,
no.
You know.
No.
La, 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 la.
Lathering up?
No. Yeah,
no.
I can't.
What's
stop
the big,
it.
What's
yeah.
the big deal?
Because it's at my place of work. I share this place.
Right.
I don't even like sharing a refrigerator or a microwave.
Do you use the solitary bathroom here?
Sometimes.
No.
Well, that to me is weird.
That's a guy's bathroom. I'm not going
it's
in there
supposed
either.
To be for the on-air staff because sometimes we don't have a lot of time to run there, run back.
Right.
But every time it's occupied and you stand out there, it's a salesperson.
Oh, is that true? I didn't know.
Or someone else that it doesn't really need it.
I don't think it's just for the on-air staff. I think that might be what some on-air staff people think.
We should hire a bathroom monitor with a clipboard, and when someone's going in, they go, how badly do you need to use this bathroom? Because Wendy may need it at any moment. How serious is your bathroom visit?
On a scale of 1 to 4, 1 to 10.
It right. is a nice bathroom. Did
one
you
and
see
two
that?
Are
yeah,
not
yeah,
included.
Stop it.
Yeah. Don't,
I edited
don't.
Myself, Bertrand. I literally bit my tongue on
I know,
that
it was
one.
Hanging. I
know.
Could see it hanging, and Steve jumped at it.
Three. Steve. What's three?
Everybody knows what three is.
Not everybody. I don't know. No, don't elaborate. Mary, quickly. I know that yesterday was a huge vote in your hometown about the two pool issue. And I know you're very upset at the outcome.
It was very close from what I hear. It was like a 1,000-something to 950, or it was very close.
For people who didn't hear, your town has two swimming pools, two public pools.
Yes.
One that's been there for a long, long time, and then a new, refurbished, beautiful one, right?
No, they've both been there for a very long time.
Oh, they have?
Yeah. Yes, they just never maintained the one now that... It's been closed, by the way, for like almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
Because they were figuring out what to do with it, whether they were going to demolish it or put more money into it and, you know, refurbish it. Well, they didn't maintain it to begin with, so now it's kind of beyond repairs. So they were asking for like $1 million. And then they said your property taxes will go up if you, you know, vote this in. So,
right.
Of course,
that's
whenever people see
away.
That on a resolution, they go.
They went out.
No, no, no. So, but there was a huge campaign to, you know, save the Lufkin pool.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it did not go through.
Well, it says it was a non-binding referendum, so I don't think it was the last word.
Yeah, exactly. And the good thing is some people have gotten voted onto the village board now who are for the pool. So
yes.
It could change.
Won't this make the other pool, the non-Lufkin pool, really crowded?
Jefferson pool.
The Jefferson pool?
Yes, it is. It's crowded to begin with because people, campers go there, you know. They have the summer camps, so all the kids from summer camp are always there.
I voted out.
Yeah, would you?
Yeah. Can't really vote it out. It's the only one left. But
so you're saying there are kids at the public pool?
Well, yeah.
They don't belong there.
It's more crowded.
Steve, is that what you were alluding to?
That's what I'm alluding to.
It's abhorrent.
The other pool is just, I like it so much better. It's more leisurely, you know, they don't have the big slide, and it's just nice.
So
who can live this way?
How many?
I mean, I don't go anyway, so I really...
I was going to say, how many adults with no kids around go to the public pool?
No, I haven't gone to the pool in
years. Except for Dave Schwann.
But my nieces go to the pool, so I want them to have the pool.
Right.
Yes. And thankfully, football was saved in Hinsdale.
What happened there?
A bond referendum, and overwhelmingly, people said, yes, we need to save football. They were going to remove...
The high school was?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Football, they were going to have problems with their pool as well. What's all the pool problems?
I don't know.
They needed so much repair to their pools that the swim team was going to be cut. All these, you know, high school sports is pretty important.
Sure, sure. So was in this case, it was saved, meaning taxpayers will have to pony up the money.
Yeah, as a result, there was the referendum was passed. The school board will meet at 6 p.m., and they're going to reverse the cuts that eliminated some of the school programs. So that's a win-win.
That's excellent. Good.
Very good. They could afford it.
Yeah, but you can't have a high school. And I would like to see their football team go away because we play against them at LT High School, and they kick our butts a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. But... You got to have a football team at school because a lot of these parents that had football players were already thinking about sending their kids elsewhere to play.
Right.
It's terrible that you'd cut high school football.
It is. Yes, it is. But luckily it was saved. Happy ending.
See, there's a lot of drama going out in the burbs.
Boy, Mary, there is. There really is. All right, we must take a break. We'll get you some news. Dave Schwann's going to take a steam bath, and then there's a lot more show ahead. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN.
You know this song, Bill?
Yeah, it always makes me cry.
Landslide.
Yeah, it makes me cry.
I believe a landslide happened last night.
Sure did.
And we have a friend of ours who's on the phone.
We do, hey. Wendy. Coleman Vandermeer Bailo joins us right now, a return visit to the show. He became famous just a few short months ago when behind legendary broadcaster Eric Rung, he did an incredible victory dance for Lori Lightfoot. How are you, Coleman?
Hey, guys. I'm great. How are you doing?
We're great, too.
Why are you doing so well? What makes you so happy this fine morning?
The sun is shining bright, and last night, I think, was a historic step for America. And, I mean, I'm still on cloud nine. It's incredible. Who would have thought, you know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, that this would have been one of the greatest upsets in American municipal history? I really have to say that.
Well, aside from Lori Lightfoot winning in a landslide election last night, we are bringing you two together again because Eric Rung is in the studio with us, and you dance behind.
Eric, hello.
Hey, buddy, I'm doing well. I missed your dancing last night. I was staring at the screen. I was covering a different candidate, but I was waiting for you.
I saw that I was looking for you in the press, and then I saw you at a different bar. I said, "Oh no, I can't dance behind Eric today."
Well, you know, you could have taken a car down to the South Side, and you know, I had plenty of room behind me.
Why no dancing?
That would have been the better option. You're right,
Coleman. No dancing from you at all last night. Why? What happened?
I was dancing.
Oh, you were?
I mean, here's the thing. It was packed. There was just so many people there, and I couldn't dance as much because I was screaming the whole time. It was packed, and you know, I've never been in a room where I've had such a palpable, real, positive energy like that. And afterwards, yeah, I was dancing a little bit, but the cameras were down. I thought, you know what? Let's leave it to Lori. Let's let her have this night.
Yep.
You know, for all the news. So I was there. You know, there's a bunch of photos. You can see me holding signs up in the crowd, but I was dancing in my heart. Let's put it that way.
And let's remind people that, Coleman, you just decided to jump on the Lori Lightfoot campaign as a volunteer. You just thought she could make a difference, and you really put your power and energy behind her, and now you're working with her.
Right. Yeah. No, it was, I started volunteering in September, and that was, it was after I had met her at a street festival in the summertime, and a friend's like, "Hey, I'm going to volunteer. You should join me." And, here we are. And it's just so surreal. But I mean, you listen to her speech. It's about bringing all these Chicagoans together. I mean, she won 50 out of 50 wards. This is a clear, distinct message, not just from me, but from, I think, most people in Chicago, like, hey, we're ready to come together and like try to make a difference for this city. And it feels really good.
When you volunteered for her at the outset, she was far from the front runner. Nobody predicted that she'd be the next mayor of Chicago. What did you see there, Coleman?
I saw someone with, you know, a genuine heart and kindness and intelligence that I could say, you know what, this is a person I can get behind. And I kind of talked about it. When you talk to her one-on-one, she's just as engaging with you as she is when she's on the podium. And that's what I really liked about her, was her genuine spirit. I thought, you know, she knows a lot more than me. I'm happy to put myself behind this person, and I do trust her. And aside from that, I mean, it's just, you know, it's like that snowball effect. It just grew and grew. And there were times, you know, even I doubted it myself. Is this, you know, can we actually do this? Can we make a difference? And I mean, who would have guessed 50 out of 50 wards for this candidate? I mean, it's a testament to her strength and her power. And I think it's going to be great. And, you know, the people that work for her campaign, you know, I've got to know very well. I've worked tirelessly, and shout out to them. And, you know, I think it was a real palpable, genuine movement that everyone in Chicago could rally behind. And I think that's very exciting.
Yeah. You know, 50 out of 50, obviously she has a clear mandate here, but she has got an awful lot of work ahead of her. Where does she start? Where would you like to see her start?
So that's a really good question, Bill. I mean, and that's what
that was, Eric, just to tell you. I don't want Bill to get credit.
I'll take the credit for
question.
That. Thank you. I would have said person date, not mandate, Eric, just between you and me.
Oh, but go ahead. I'm sorry. Okay. Right. I mean, I would say, you know, there's a lot of people that have said, I don't know anyone that would want this job. The tasks at hand are so difficult. And it's not
Whitney's
just that,
been saying it all morning.
I can't believe it. Good for her.
Good for her. But everyone in America, and maybe a lot of people around the world, are going to be watching Chicago with a pointed eye to see how we tackle these challenges and move forward. Right? There's a lot of things from the crime and the pension crisis. And all I can say is, you know, I'm not as smart as Lori. I'll say that. But when you ask her a question, she's not going to tell you what you want to hear. She's like, I'm glad you asked this question. Here's what I believe the solution is. And here's like the 5-step process. Where do we start? I think it's going to be, uniting our neighborhoods, right? There's a huge, huge difference between the West Side and the North Side and the South Side. And I think it's going to start with kind of uniting these people after this historic election. We're still kind of floating on cloud nine, and bringing us together as a people and making our city more united. And I don't know how she's going to do that, but I think, you know, you look at her policies, they have a great idea, restoring faith between the authorities and the communities and kind of bridging that gap. And I think that's where it starts, is giving everyone faith in our fellow citizens.
Do you think she went to bed at all last night? Because if I was her, there was no way I'd be able to sleep with all that adrenaline running through me.
I don't know. You know, I just remember there was a day I was in the office and I got to peek at her schedule. I said, I don't know how this person is putting that much energy. As soon as she's done, she must just like shut down. You know what I mean? I'm sure she got plenty of sleep last night, and I'm sure she's feeling great today. And I said to some of the staff, like, hey, what do we do tomorrow? It's like, well, now we have to think about the inauguration. You know what I mean? There's still a lot of work to do. So I'm going to be going in and helping to shut down some of the field offices with some of the other staff. And this is, you know, this isn't the end. This is just the beginning, which is kind of exciting.
Will you be there? Of course you will. And have you worked on some new dance moves?
I mean, I'll just be dancing all the way across Chicago. I don't think I can stop dancing, right? I said that. If you stop dancing, it breaks the spell. So,
Coleman, I know you do work for her outreach program and for the LGBTQ community. I mentioned this earlier, but I want you to hear it too. People say, why is it important? It says in the headlines, the first openly gay mayor. Why is that important? And I said, it's important because if there's a kid out there who feels not connected or disenfranchised, this says to that kid, here's a girl who's living what you're living through, and she's the mayor of Chicago. Do you agree with that? I hope you do.
I mean, it's just even hearing it from someone in the mainstream media, you know, like you, Bill, it brings a little bit of a tear to my eye. This is one of the most important things that could happen to people like that in this city. And, you know, I'm proud to stand behind Lori for that. And it's not just for, you know, it's for women, too. It's for the Black community. It's for people that feel like they don't have a chance because of who they're born and, you know, where they start in life. And she said that in her speech. You know, this is our job now, is to make everyone, every child out there believe that they could be mayor of Chicago. And I think that's a really great statement, you know, to end the night. And also, you know, she was really nice about Tony Preckwinkle, and I'm excited to see the both of them work together because they're going to have a lot of work to do together, you know. And I think Tony was a great candidate, and her and Lori together, you know, working for a better Chicago, I think is going to be monumental and historic in its own right.
It's the Lori Lightfoot hat trick, woman, African-American, gay, and I am all behind it, and I'm very proud of our city.
Thank you, Wendy. I am, too. I'm with you guys 100%. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Of course.
Wendy, we got to go get some matzo ball soup down the street.
Right. Well, bring Lori with. I'll buy her a bowl of matzo ball at 11 City Diner.
That sounds like a great lunch.
Coleman,
I'll work on it.
We're going to send you Eric Rung's schedule so you'll know what stories he's covering, and you can stand behind him and dance.
I tell you, that I need you behind me dancing. I got more comments on that than I have on any other story I've ever done.
Well,
ever.
You know what? I will be there when you least expect it, and I look forward to that time.
Keep dancing, my friend.
Congratulations. We're
Thank
very
you
happy.
Guys.
All right. Have
a great day.
You too. All right.
God, I love him.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's a really good guy. All right, we'll take a break. A lot more show.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder here. And we would like to welcome a new sponsor here at WGN and a new sponsor of the Chicago White Sox. We're getting to know a new sponsor. Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer of Lakeside Bank joins us, Alan Rose. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely.
Did you bring us free samples, Alan?
I did. Free money for everyone.
Thank you. You're the best. Come by every day.
I did notice he brought you a pen with a chain on it.
Yeah,
it's ripped off.
That's all right. That's fine. Tell us what we need to know about the bank. Well, tell us about Lakeside Bank.
Oh, it's a fascinating story. Actually, first, I should say I'm not a banker. I'm a marketing person, so you guys can relax.
Okay, good.
I've been with Lakeside since 2015. Lakeside is a 53-year-old Chicago-only privately owned bank. We're 7 branches. Number 8's about to get underway in beautiful Bridgeport.
Yay.
We're nearly $1.8 billion in assets, which puts us in the top 8% of banks in the country.
All right, a lot of banks out there, and what makes Lakeside different?
I'm glad you asked. You know, everyone talks about technology in banking. Well, we have all the tech the big guys have. But what we have that makes us different is personal service. So it's that unique blend of technology and personal service. That's the future. What we do is we have speed, we customize, and every Lakeside client has their own Lakeside banker. Try that at a giant
bank.
Wow.
All right, Bill, I go to the bank when I need special services. Otherwise, I do a lot of things online. Bill, you love going to the bank.
I enjoy going to a bank, Alan. I'll be honest with you.
I hope you'll come in.
You have tellers and stuff?
We have real people.
You
in fact,
do?
You know, our people stay. Our average tenure of our people is 13 years.
Oh, that's
impressive.
Amazing.
Yeah, and our clients stay, too. Decades, even generations.
Yeah.
Now, I just am curious why you chose WGN to advertise and the Chicago White Sox.
Well, what other radio station would we be on, guys?
Good answer.
Yes, thank you, thank you. Well, first of all, why radio? Radio, we love radio. It's the theater of the mind. We can create the imagery we want. We can develop single-subject commercials and really build not only what Lakeside stands for, but build that essential brand personality. And radio's great value.
And the White Sox component has got to play into it a little bit.
Absolutely.
Huh?
As I mentioned, we're about to break ground in Bridgeport. That'll be our eighth branch.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a coming home for us. Lakeside started on the south side, and our CEO's father was born in Bridgeport. So it's a real full circle for us.
Yeah.
That's a win-win.
Affiliated with other banks nationwide or a separate entity?
No, we are a privately owned, Chicago-only bank. Very proud of that.
Talk about the advantage of that. What's the advantage in that, would you say?
Again, as I mentioned, it's about personal service, which means things get done fast. We can customize. We don't force clients, you know, a round peg into a square hole. We're able to do things with incredible speed. Things get done. Our bankers have responsibility and authority. Again, the big guys don't have any of that.
Mm-hmm. How has the world of banking changed since you've been in it? It used to be, I used to hear people say, I'm just going to live off the interest. Does anyone ever live off their interest anymore?
Only if they're interesting, but no. No, the world is, I'm not a banker, but I know a lot of good ones, and they're all at Lakeside, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, the world has changed. People are very rate sensitive. People have been uncertain with the Fed going up, down, and sideways. So it's been an interesting time, even the last few years.
Yeah.
Now, when did Lakeside start advertising? Because really, that's why we wanted to have you on today, because if people don't know about you, they can't come in.
That's also a great question. Thank you. We, as I mentioned, we're 53 years old, and we had never really done any marketing. So we launched in April of 2016. And thank you, Chicago. The marketing has worked pretty well, so I get to continue eating, which is always a nice thing. The campaign is, we position the bank as solving industry problems. Each ad we create addresses a specific issue in the banking world. For example, let's say the concern is about bankers have no authority to get things done. Well, we talk about power. And you're going to run this commercial a little bit later on. The issue is that bankers have no authority to get things done. So I translated that into the power about being able to do things. And we exaggerated Lakeside's power. So the power to make things happen. So the couple, we created a couple that are always in every commercial, and they sing, they got the power.
And then, you have a lovely singing voice, Alan.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
I've been working on it in the shower, but the dog's been howling, so I have to stop.
But that's what you want to know in advertising is how is it going to, I'm a little selfish, how's it going to affect me?
Exactly. And then what happens in this commercial is that the our power is exaggerated. And one of the couples talks about Lakeside bankers being able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, bend steel in their bare hands, change the course of mighty rivers. So we have some fun with it.
Yeah, you should. Well,
and that personality has helped make us different.
Yeah.
That does help. Alan Rose is Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer of Lakeside Bank. He is not a banker, Bill.
He's a singer, though. We've learned that.
Thank you. Should I quit my day job?
No, do not do that. Talk about this. How does a bank know how proactive to be with their customers? When I was growing up, we had a bank that never called us, never said anything. You'd always have to approach them. But I know there's a trend now where the banks tend to reach out to you and say, hey, what should we do different for your money? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think if a bank doesn't know what to help people with, something
you need to find
wrong,
a different bank.
You need to find a new bank.
Yeah.
Come see us. Yes, you have to be proactive. You have to understand what people need.
Yeah.
And that's just being in tune with their daily lives.
Right.
And all of us need good investments, right? Yeah. We need a place to save money. We need a banker you can pick up the phone and stop in and talk to.
Mm-hmm.
When you join Lakeside, you will have your own banker. So if you have a question on a CD or a money market or a mortgage, I got a shout out to the mortgage guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
You will have that at Lakeside.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Welcome aboard to WGN.
Thank you.
And to the Chicago White Sox. And can you market a win for the Sox tomorrow on opening day?
I can guarantee it.
All right. Yeah. I love it. He's Alan Rose, Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer, Lakeside Bank. And the best place to send people, lakesidebank.com?
Absolutely.
Sing it, Alan. Don't sing it.
No,
don't sing it.
No. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's all here, 720 WGN. I'm thinking of tropical drinks.
We
for
need
some
pina
reason.
Coladas in here. Toot sweet, Wendy. Dr. John Duffy is here. You didn't bring pina coladas, did you, John?
I'm afraid I didn't.
No,
in the trunk.
We should have warned you in advance. We have John on every other Wednesday, clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert. And you have taught Wendy and I a new term that I was not aware of. Of course, we've talked about suicide many times during your visits.
Yeah.
But I don't know what passive suicide is. What is that, please?
Yeah, and that's honestly something I've kind of coined in the last couple of years. I noticed that more and more young people have no intent on taking their lives, but they have a hard time valuing anything about themselves. And so more than once, I've heard the idea that I am never going to do anything to hurt myself, but if I got hit by a bus or if I didn't wake up tomorrow morning, that would be okay with me.
Where does this come from?
There's a couple different arguments. One is that because of access to the internet, they develop a sense of purpose and a point of view very early. And so they have some idea of what's right and, right and what's wrong, and they feel like they should be making a contribution at earlier ages than we felt. And so
unrealistically.
Right, unrealistically. And so they feel like, well, I'm kind of letting kind of human nature down in a way, and that's unacceptable. And because I'm not doing my part, do I really add any value to anything anywhere?
That's so weird, because when you think of us growing up, we didn't have a part. We just kind of were able to just be.
Right.
Now kids today feel such a responsibility to be the best student, to be the best this, to be the best that. This pressure is going to kill them.
It's going to kill some of them. And part of it is also social media, because they see other kids that appear to be accomplishing way more than they are at their age. You know, not necessarily is that reality, but that's the reality they see. And so when you're...
But Instagram is not real. People put their best moments up there. You know, well, they don't put the bad moments there.
It's true. And you can take any teenager or even tweenage kid and ask them, you know, like, what do you think people are posting on Instagram? And they'll be able to tell you this isn't their real moments. This is their very best. These are curated moments. And still, look at all the likes they get. You know what I mean? There's still that, like, my self-esteem is affected because they have 1,100 likes and I have 500. And so I'm not holding my own. You know what I mean? The self-esteem is gauged that way.
I say they do away with likes. You can post whatever you want and people can comment.
Yeah.
Well, even the comments would be bad. But the likes, that kills me that's what kids are striving for.
Well, the words that are used in social media actually are really brutal for kids. Likes, the little hearts, and friends. Right? This idea that, you know, like, okay, when Facebook first came out, I have X number of friends. You have 300 more friends than me.
Yeah.
And then the recognition that a lot of us parents bring in, like, how many of these people do you really know? You probably only have 7 or 8 friends out of this 1,100. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a conflict too.
Don't you think, John, there's also a subliminal component in that a kid is seeing his or her peers doing things every night, attending parties every night, you know, being someplace quote-unquote glamorous, and they go, oh, I'm not doing any of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
FOMO. Fear of missing out.
Oh, is that what that is?
And it's a real thing. I mean, you know, I
thought it was a dishwashing detergent.
No.
I had no idea what it was.
I am hip with the young kids, Bill. FOMO.
FOMO yes. It is. All
right. Right. That extra shine with FOMO, right? No, FOMO is actually a real phenomenon that kids suffer. I mean, you know, there are kids who are referred to me specifically for this, for, you know, the unwillingness to put the phone down. And parents, we think they're addicted to the phone somehow, but really they're addicted to being connected enough so that they're not missing out on anything, even though virtually always you are, but you can see what you're missing out on Snapchat and on Instagram.
It's
you
true.
See it. It's there. It's where we might have been able to guess it. They know it.
Yeah.
They can see, you know, even if it was a party that they weren't invited to and their friend said, you know, no, I don't think I'm going to go. They can see that their friend went.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That is the difference, because there were parties that I like to go to all the parties I did, and I would go to them even without being invited. But sometimes what you don't know won't hurt you.
Yeah.
They know everything. I can't even imagine that. Like if a friend says, no, I can't go out to dinner with you because I've got to go hang with my grandparent. And then you look on Instagram and they're there at a party.
Right. Right, absolutely.
How do we help these kids?
Well, part of it is what Bill said, is that recognition that, well, what are you putting up on Instagram? You're putting up your very best moments. What do you think everybody else is doing? You know what I mean? They're putting up their best moments. They're not putting up those moments when they're alone in their room and feeling depressed and feeling or doing homework. So you have to recognize the reality of this isn't reality. You know, like it's something very, very different than that. And that it will give your kid a step into reality and away from that kind of passive suicidal thought.
But don't they know that it's not reality, but how do you get them to grasp that idea?
Yeah.
I think they know.
Oh, they absolutely know. Right. Part of it is to get them engaged in something else. So we want to focus on that social media aspect of their lives, but it's very hard to win that. That's a really potent part of their lives, and that almost is what it is for now. So I always encourage parents, like, get your kid engaged in something else, and then they'll feel a sense of meaning and purpose that has nothing to do with how many likes or hearts or anything else that they get or how many friends they've accumulated on social media.
Right.
So if your kid is an athlete or a musician or just or a volunteer, virtually anything can help. Like eliminate the FOMO and make them feel like, you know, okay, I'm part of something. It might not be everything. It might not be what this kid's involved in, but it's something.
These are high school kids that are most susceptible to this, or college kids, or both?
Middle school and high school kids, I think, most. But it really doesn't go away in college. It's just that there's more options on a campus to go places, you know? Yeah.
And schools recognize this, I'm guessing, don't they? Schools know this is going on.
They absolutely do. And school social workers are holding seminars, at least in our area. I've been involved in a couple of them where they talk about, you know, how do I talk to kids about social media?
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Ellen has a comment. Ellen has joined us, 312-981-7200. Ellen, your thoughts?
I just wanted to say that I don't believe that this is, and I'm sure Jen would acknowledge, this isn't exclusive to young people. I have often felt that I don't want to wake up in the morning. I don't do anything. I don't do anything to take action on this because I don't want to leave a legacy of giving up to my grandchildren. But I feel increasingly invisible to friends and family. And there are days, I mean, literally when I go to bed at night, I pray for the grabber.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear this, Ellen.
Ellen, and is that an artifact of, you know, looking at your cohort, your friends, people you know on social media? Or what do you think drives that in you?
First of all, I'm not engaged in social media. Very, very rarely do I even look at it. I think it's been... It has actually been developing over the last maybe 10 years. I don't want to cry now. So it's just grown over the last 10 years. I come from a large family, and we used to be the family that everybody wanted to be a part of. Everybody. Yeah. We were fun, funny, engaging, engaged, everything. And then just some bad things were said about me. And one of them managed to corral everybody else into her corner, and I'm completely invisible. And my mother is elderly, and we're all trying to take care of her. So I understand that emotions are maybe a little bit higher than normal.
Sure.
But regardless, I've had surgery, and nobody calls or shows up.
Yeah.
Jeez. My daughter had a baby and nobody acknowledged it. It is continuous. And I happen to have a daughter-in-law that just abjectly hates me. And she leaves the house when I come over. She doesn't come to my house. And I've reconciled that.
Mm-hmm.
But now she's kind of keeping my grandchildren away from me. And that's something I cannot live with.
I so get it, Ellen. And it sounds like this has happened over the course of 10 years where you're increasingly ostracized from family and maybe some friends and things. And I so feel for your plight. And it's not unusual. This happens to people, I think, in families that these toxic situations kind of take over. over, and connections that were really tight become frayed. I don't think therapy is necessarily the answer to everything, but if I had to offer you a starting point, I would strongly encourage you to get in front of a therapist sometime soon, just to first of all talk through your feelings and then start thinking solution based, like how do I get back in touch with my family, with my grandkids.
Yeah, I go to a therapist, and I just switched, and we're in the, you know, the history part. But, you know, I run the risk of sounding like a complainer or a malingerer when I tell therapists my story. It just goes.
You got to get out of your own head, though. They're there to help you, and I don't think a therapist, and John, you can answer this, you're not going to listen to her as complaining. You're going to listen to her having problems that you're going to try and help her solve.
Oh, and I can hear it in your voice, Ellen.
Yeah.
Exactly. I agree with Wendy, and I can tell that you're in pain. I can tell that you're not just complaining for the sake of complaining. I know what that looks like. I think most of us know what that looks and feels like. I can tell that you've been through a series of really, really difficult events. And my hope is, I can't tell you that every single one of those frayed relationships will be fully repaired, but I've been through enough situations that felt hopeless where hope showed up somewhere along the therapeutic line.
Oh, I hope so.
Ellen, good luck. Sorry about your mother who's aging, and that may end up help bringing you guys together too, because you're all kind of helping out with that. Good luck to you.
Good luck, Ellen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen. Wow.
That's right. So tough.
Awful.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. More with Dr. John Duffy is coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, you cannot come to Easter brunch because you eat the whole butter lamb. You know that. You did that last time.
I love butter.
The whole butter lamb. Dr. John Duffy is here. He is our guest. We're talking about a couple of different things. And, John, this is a very important topic as well. These are couples that, for some reason, for one reason or another, are just not communicating. What's your take on this?
Yeah, so I'm working with more and more couples who communicate a lot, say a lot of words to each other, but they end up with divisive words. So they end up like kind of, especially in therapy, but in other settings too, kind of vying for the win instead of acknowledging each other, listening to each other, and making kind of shorter work of their conflict so they can just enjoy their time each other more.
Yes.
But I find that more and more couples are spending the vast majority of their time in conflict, trying to win something. And I always tell them, if you win something, you've both lost, right? Because, you know,
there is no winner.
You're going to get this negative vibe from your partner about the fact that you think you won, and there is no winner. So the idea is to come to some mutual understanding. But the reluctance I'm finding, and this is in the last few months more than anything else, in couples to be willing to do that, to say, you know, okay, I really want to hear you out and understand and acknowledge where you're coming from about this thing where I'm staying out too late with the guys, or, you know, the house isn't clean enough, or we're arguing about finances. That becomes the sum total of all of their communication. This happens in parenting sometimes too, but I'm noticing it in marriages a lot. And so people will tell me, oh, I'm finding excuses to stay at the office longer because I know that once we come home, we're going to be in conflict.
You know, the worst phrase to hear, and it stemmed back from my mom when she would say this to me, but now if Jim ever says it to me, I told you so. God, those are fighting words.
There's no win in
none.
I told you so, right?
Told you so.
Right.
Knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. And if that could be shifted to something along the lines of, all right, we both learned a little something here, let's move on. You know what I mean? And take the vast majority of the conflict out of it. You know, I do think that this can be eroding to a marriage over time.
Right.
I think it takes a while, but in the meantime, it doesn't feel very good. Whereas if you spend most of your time connecting, laughing, you know, parenting,
right,
and doing the work of being a couple, that's great. But if you're in conflict because you're under communicating, because you're not saying the thing that says, I get where you're coming from. And this is what somehow we become stingy about offering that. Like, I understand. Good point.
But don't most people kind of take their communicating skills from their own parents, don't they? They look at the way that their mom and dads argued or, you know, squabbled about the smallest or the biggest things, and they go, well, that must be the way you handle a lack of communication, yeah. Conflict. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. It's all modeled for us, and most of us think we don't become our parents.
But we do.
We do, unfortunately. I know.
Here's three for three, right? Right. I mean, yeah. we all agree we become our parents in many ways, right? Sure. And so I think you're right, and all I'm asking is a modicum of awareness that, okay, this is the pattern that we've got going here. And one thing we can do to shift that pattern for the better is to say the next thing. This is what I find myself saying to couples all the time. Like, okay, you're really angry. Say the next thing. You know, and the next thing might be, oh, you really hurt my feelings when you said this, you know? Right. And then you come to a different way of communicating with one another. Yeah. You know, it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
I am guilty of not listening enough with Jim or the boys. Sometimes they just want to complain about something.
Right.
And being the fixer, because a lot of moms take that role on, it's like, well, here's what, it's like, I don't want your advice. I want to complain about something. Can you just let me complain? So I've been trying to just go, wow, that sucks. Because somebody, when you say something terrible, like, oh, this terrible thing happened in my life, you want someone to commiserate with you and go, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Instead of going, here's what I would do. And I'm sorry, I'm just trying to help, but I'm trying to be more aware of that now.
It's so hard when you feel like, oh my gosh, the solution is right there. I know what it is. I want to tell you what it is, and then you'll be done. But you're right. I mean, this is something that it takes a long time to learn in therapy, much less parenting, is you don't have to be the fixer. Most of us can figure out our own issues and our own problems. What we really want is somebody to commiserate with, to acknowledge, okay, that stinks. I'm so sorry you're going through that.
And that's a great response.
Right?
And then if they want more, they say, what do you think I should do?
Exactly. And then all of a sudden you got a brainstorming session going.
So when you're talking to a client in therapy and they're laying out a problem for you and you know what the answer is it more rewarding for the person you're dealing with to figure it out on their own? I mean, you don't want to hand it to them, right? You want to give them the parameters to solve the problem.
Not only is that true, but sometimes I think I know the answer.
Yeah.
And I'll acknowledge, like, oh, I'm so sorry you're going through that.
Yeah.
What do you think you ought to do? And my client will often, and I can think of a recent example that I won't share because it's a little revealing, my client will come up with an answer that is way better than what I have.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. Because they know their lives better. They know their situation way better than I do. And so you learn not to be presumptuous that you know all the answers.
Sure, of course.
You know what I mean? I think that can happen in relationships outside of the therapy room as well.
No question.
Yeah.
John, thanks for being here.
You're the
best. Always a pleasure. It's Dr. John Duffy. If people want to hear the podcast better that you do with your wife, WGN Plus is the
idea. It's actually on iTunes.
Yeah, we need to update that.
Yeah, so we'll update that. Right now it's on iTunes. I think it'll be on WGN Plus again at some time.
Is it on Netflix?
Absolutely. It's on Netflix.
And drjohnduffy.com is how people find you and all your outlets.
All my stuff is right there.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, guys.
Breaking some news, and then White Sox baseball. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.